As I was saying on the previous tape, the remains of prehistoric leaves and other organic matter have left their impressions in these so-called clays. Now, I was able to find some fairly big pieces of this material, cut it out with a saw and machine it into tetrahedrons and cubes, and try it out in my high-pressure machines as a substitute for the so-called Tennessee Grade A lava, or pyrophyllite, that comes from South Africa and is sold in this country by, these days, the Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company. It used to be called Tennessee Grade A Lava and was sold by Tennessee Lava Corporation, Chattanooga, Tennessee. General Electric Company purchased small quantities of this from me, and I'll go into that a little later. And tried it out and found that it worked, but it was not as good as the pyrophyllite from South Africa, which is a beautiful gray color and tends to be rather uniform in its properties and has a higher density than the Utah material. I also have tried it out and found out that it works as a cell material for my high-pressure machines, but again, it's more difficult to work with because it has a tendency to cleave and has other properties that are not as good as the much more uniform South African material. However, it will do the job, and I suspect if one were to tunnel back under the very heavy rock overburden that is present in the sides of some of the clay pits, one could obtain an unweathered material here in Utah that would be better. At any rate, I went into the meeting about 10 minutes late and pointed out to those present that should the South African supply of pyrophyllite dry up for some reason or other, that is, become much more expensive in price or something like that, that this Utah material is the only source I know of that might substitute for that, and that rather large quantities of pyrophyllite are used as high-pressure cell materials in the manufacture of synthetic diamonds. The Provo Herald ran a small article on my remarks that evening, but as usual, they sort of jazzed up the idea and didn't get the story straight. You really wonder about newspaper reporters and what you read in the newspapers whenever you know something yourself. You'll always realize that the reporting of the information is almost always defective or slanted to have more reader appeal or sensationalize the thing. About 1960, I formed a company with my two boys, David and Tracy, to try to teach them some business principles and let them earn a little money. We called this the Provo Pressure Products Company. We made a small duplicated letterhead and tried to market a little bit of this material from the clay pits, which we called Utah Pipestone. There's a monument in Pipestone, Minnesota, a national monument with a building and a tour and things like that, to talk about Minnesota Pipestone. Now, Otto Rose and I have visited there. And the story they give you is that there's a vein of pipestone in this area that the Indians used in making peace pipes. And at least one Indian is there still who makes peace pipes and sells them. And this must have been back in the late 50s or maybe even the mid 50s when we visited there. And I purchased a peace pipe from a fellow who called himself Standing Eagle. Now at the time we were there, you couldn't even see this vein of pyrophyllite, which ran in thickness from an inch to perhaps 4 inches, and it was underwater. But the story goes that Indians from all over the continent would come to this place to get pipestone to make peace pipes, and that this area was one place where Indian tribes could not fight each other. Well, on seeing that tiny little deposit of pipestone, I thought for sure there must be other deposits of similar material, possibly in Utah. And in talking with geology friends at Brigham Young University, they told me about this clay-like material on the west side of Utah Lake that was primarily pyrophyllite. And so that's how I went over to these clay pits and dug around and found the material. The Utah material is not as bright or red as the material tends to be from Minnesota, but it's more beautifully banded, sometimes with yellowish bands, red bands, gray bands, and sort of grayish-blue bands. The pipestone from Minnesota, I think, contains more silicate material. It's harder, not as soft, and not as uniform in some respects. Although the layering of the material in Minnesota is certainly not as definite as this across on the west of Utah Lake. Well, anyway, I took the boys over there and we procured a few hundred pounds of this material, sawed it up with a bandsaw, and put out a little flyer that said this: "Gentlemen, we have obtained a supply of Utah pipestone that is much superior to any specimens of Minnesota pipestone that we have seen. Utah pipestone has been successfully used as a replacement for pyrophyllite, parentheses, Tennessee grade A lava, close parentheses, in the tetrahedral anvil high-pressure apparatus. A sheet giving some of the properties of Utah pipestone is enclosed. Should you care to experiment with this material, we are offering a 1.5-pound specimen shipped postpaid within continental USA for $1. Additional quantities are currently available in blocks weighing up to 25 pounds at 75 cents per pound." This is just a parenthetical note now, and I'm not reading from our flyer. Minnesota pipestone, at that time, you could only purchase from an Indian chief, and it cost about $5 a pound. And the so-called Tennessee Grade A lava, the pyrophyllite imported from South Africa, was selling from anywhere from $1 to $2 per pound. Okay, now continuing the reading. "Incidentally, some specimens have extremely beautiful banding and coloring, and since the material is easily carved with a penknife, make interesting media for artistic expression. Application of a little furniture wax to a carving will, with light rubbing, create a high luster finish. Selected artistic, as mined, specimens are also available at 75 cents per pound, FOB Provo. It is our aim to eventually supply many items used in high-pressure technology. In this connection, we can now offer 0.020-inch diameter bismuth wire, parentheses, extruded from a Sarco 99.999% pure stock, close parentheses, at $1.25 per foot. We hope you will favor us with a trial order. Very truly yours." And then it's signed by my son, David R. Hall. Now, attached to this flyer, which was on this letterhead, which read Provo Pressure Products Company, P.O. Box 33, Station 1, Provo, Utah. And incidentally, in the upper left-hand corner, we had a sketch of a tetrahedron, which, of course, was symbolic of my tetrahedral press. And then on the face, one of the faces of this tetrahedron, it said 3P, and the 3 was over the P and interlocking through the circular part of the P. And then following that is capital C, capital O, period, 3P Company. Well, The second sheet sets and properties of Utah pipestone.
Appearance?
Variable, but commonly light gray with dull red bands. Feel? Waxy.
Machinability?
Excellent.
Machinability superior to grade A lava.
Hardness? Easily marked with fingernail. Swelling in water? Nil.
Density?
2.18 grams per cc.
Parentheses.
Grade A lava density equal 2.66 grams per cc.
Close parentheses.
Shear friction?
As measured according to Bridgman.
This was in a Bridgman anvil friction device that I had built very early when I came to Brigham Young University. That last statement was not in the circular.
Very similar to that of grade A lava.
Compressibility? Very similar to grade A lava.
Weight loss?
After 1 hour at 1700 degrees centigrade, 3.2%.
Refractoriness?
Similar to grade A lava.
Typical chemical composition.
And this is a parenthetical note now that was not in the circular.
I got someone to perform this analysis for me. I'm not sure.
It vaguely runs through my mind that this was done out at the U.S. Steel plant at Geneva.
Okay, now back to the circular.
This is typical chemical composition. SiO2,
60.1%.
Al2O3, 28.5%.
Al2O3, 28.5%. This is another parenthetical note away from the circular. I'm having trouble with my Sony tape recorder. It keeps rejecting the tape, so I switched over to a tape recorder I bought for Ida Rose, Gen Electric compact cassette that I just purchased a couple of weeks ago. Well, back to the circular. Fe2O3, 4.3%. Calcium oxide, nil. Magnesium oxide, 0.2%. Na2O, 0.6%. K2O, 0.4%. Volatile, 3.2%. Parentheses, 1 hour at 1700 degrees centigrade. Close parentheses. Total, 97.3%. Borden's Elmer's Glue-All is recommended for gluing pieces of Utah pipestone together. When used with pipestone, lava, or similar materials, this glue sets quickly and does not interfere with most high-pressure uses for these materials. We once had a record book of the hours worked by Tracy and David on this project, and also of the companies who purchased the material. I think we sold $100 worth or something in that neighborhood, and it may be that those notebooks, they were little notebooks, may still be in our materials stored away in boxes somewhere around here. Well, in any event, I told the people at the hearing that there may be this hidden value that they have not known about. If the supply of pyrophyllite from South Africa would disappear, and it might be that they wouldn't want to fill these very deep pits with garbage, at least not all of them, because the value of the pyrophyllite there, if it could be sold for 50 cents a pound, and the demand for the use of this kind of material in high pressure work and diamond synthesis continued, it may be that there's $100,000 a year of this material, or perhaps more than that, that is used. And to cover it up with garbage is something they may not want to do. Well, I don't know what effect my remarks will have. If they did fill them up with garbage and the need came up, it may be that you'd tunnel down through the garbage to get the pyrophyllite at a later date. Then, of course, the South African supply may continue strong and the Utah stuff would never be needed. I have been working down at the Columbia Lane shop the past few days sawing off steel bars for this new cubic press that we are working on. A few days ago, we obtained a rather large piece of steel weighing 2,500 pounds. It's 14 and a half inches in diameter, 48 inches long, and this will need to be sawed into sections for the bases. Last night, Friday the 6th of June, I went out there in the evening and managed to drag this large piece of steel by means of our overhead hoist out of the yard and into the shop, and in a couple hours' time had hoisted it over and deposited on our Marvel 8 bandsaw. And today, which is the 7th, and it's 7:30 a.m. as I'm dictating this, we'll go back. I guess today is Friday. I'm sorry. Today is Friday the 6th. Yesterday was Thursday the 5th. Today, Friday the 6th, it is 7:25 a.m. as I dictate this, and in a little while I will be going back to our H. Tracy Hall Incorporated shop on Columbia Lane and maneuvering this large bar around and cutting off some sections with the Marvel 8 bandsaw. I'll be using a 3-tooth per inch hook type tool steel blade. That is, the teeth are tool steel and they're welded to a flexible backing. This will be the largest diameter piece of steel we have ever tried to cut. This steel is 4142, according to the specs, has a hardness level of Rockwell C15. Well, that's all for now. Today is Sunday, June the 8th, 1975. Last Friday evening, Ida Rose and I went to the Salt Lake Airport. Nancy didn't go. She had a date. And we picked Virginia up. She was scheduled in on United 767 at 9:35 p.m., but her plane was late, didn't arrive till 10 o'clock. Scott Quist, Virginia's boyfriend, was at the airport, and we talked with him while waiting for the plane to come home. After picking up Virginia's baggage and talking to her for a little while, she went off with Scott, and he brought her home later that evening. Saturday morning early, Ida Rose and I went out to the farm and put in about 5 hours work out there, running the tractor and the rototiller and hoeing weeds, mainly just cultivating and hoeing. We've had an awful lot of rain, and it's still cool most of the time, a most unusual spring. On the way back to Provo, we stopped at the Italian place in Payson and got their steak and everything sandwich. This Italian place has a little store, whatever you want to call it, in almost every small town around these parts, and seems to be doing very well. Yesterday I finished sawing the 4142 steel, which is about 15 inch in diameter and 48 inches long, into 7 equivalent sections. We'll need 6 of these for bases for the new press, and the 7th one will be a spare. I filled each of our vehicles with gasoline last night, which is my usually Saturday evening practice. The Ford LTD, the Chrysler, and the VW Beetle. I loaned my machinist, Wesley Lifford, the Ford, to go down to Cedar City to pull home a van, and so that's the only one I didn't get filled last night. This morning I awakened early, about 6 o'clock, shaved and showered, and then decided to take a hot bath because I have a pretty stiff neck and shoulder. I guess I got it from hoeing out at the farm yesterday. Tried to loosen that up a little bit. Then with plenty of time on my hands, I walked leisurely over to the university, picked up my mail at Post Office Box 7533, University Station. Went to my office briefly and picked up the mail that came to my P.O. Box 108 in the engineering building. Then went over to my box in the chemistry department office, got the mail there. Then leisurely strolled back home. It was a beautiful morning, cool, clouds and sunshine, so interesting and everything so green. It's our state conference day, and Virginia and Idaho's and I and Nancy went to state conference this morning at 10 o'clock. And at 3 this afternoon, we will have our usual sacrament meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. right now. I've had some ideas for using reinforcing fibers or filaments or screens or meshes in diamond or other hard materials for making them tougher for impact use, particularly such use as rock drilling. And I have made a few notes in my notebook today concerning this general idea. I've been doing a lot of thinking on energy, particularly solar energy, and Idaho's and I keep talking about building some kind of a house out on our Payson farm in which wind energy, solar energy, and the like are used, and I've been getting a lot of ideas on this for the past 6 months or so, but nothing has gelled as yet. Today is Sunday, the 15th of June, 1975. It's Father's Day. Charlene sent me a tie. Nancy and Virginia gave me a record of a new soprano. And Idaho's gave me two pairs of pants and a pullover shirt. We heard from Karen last evening. She had flown into Salt Lake City, and her parents had picked her up and taken her out to where they live. It's the Van Dykes in South Jordan near Riverton. Yesterday, Idaho's did a sort of a retiling job on our main bathroom upstairs. She regrouted the tile. Felt she had left it the grout too deep first time. I guess it's about a year ago she retiled the upstairs, or tiled, they weren't tiled before, tiled the floor of the upstairs bath and tiled the downstairs bath, which was just painted, and wallpapered it, and really fixed it up downstairs so that it looks 1,000% better than it did before. Solved the problem we'd had for a long time of the wall sort of washing away in the shower. The whole house was redecorated at that time. We got new carpet in our bedroom and in the northwest bedroom, and the middle bedroom, which was the middle bedroom, midway in the house on the north, but was my study for many years, in which Idaho's is now taken for a study. And I have moved into the northwest bedroom for my study. We've papered and painted and fixed up a lot out in the yard. Added an extension to the carport to provide some more storage to the north of the carport, and also replaced concrete, which I think I mentioned. That's the driveway concrete, which I think I mentioned once before. Yesterday I fixed a broken pipe out at the farm on a
vertical
It was a vertical pipe, a sprinkler system that I knocked over with a tractor on the preceding day. That turned into be just about an all-day job, in that I couldn't find the tools I needed to extract the broken off section of pipe that was in the tee. In fact, I must have spent 4 or 5 hours chasing around town trying to find some kind of thing that would do that. I finally borrowed a device from a plumber by the name of Bailey, who has a shop above me there on Columbia Lane in Orem. But then after looking at that thing and sticking it in a sample section of pipe, I decided it probably wouldn't do the job. So I kept on looking, and I finally found exactly the exact thing that was needed at the new Skaggs drugstore out in Orem. They had them in 3 sizes, and so I bought all the sizes for future use. 3/8, 1/2 inch, and 3/4 inch. I also did a couple of hours of weeding by hoe out on the farm. We have a terrific problem with morning glory. And I also stayed around and watered each of the 2 sets of sprinkler systems. Turn them on for about a half an hour apiece. We have about 5 sprinklers. They're on pipes, 3/4 inch diameter. They extend up 4.5 to 5 feet above the ground. They run east and west and are something like 30 feet apart. And they are in the southeast corner of our farm, and cover, I guess, something like 3/4 of an acre. The water to them is supplied by a well, which we had drilled a few years back. We have a 3/4 horsepower Sears Roebuck pump that is located down at about the 90-foot level. The well was actually drilled to a total depth of 200 feet. It's a 6-inch casing, and Idaho's got a little metal shed to cover the well over, and I guess we covered that over last year sometime. The shed is probably about 10 by 10 foot. These kind of sheds are rather popular these days, and Sears and ZCMI and other places sell these things to stick in your backyard on the lawn to keep garden tools and that sort of thing in. We'd had very high water out at Payson, but suddenly the past few days the water in the big runoff ditch to the south has decreased to just a trickle. On Friday night, Ida Rose and I went out to the farm, and she weeded while I ran the tractor to loosen up the soil and get rid of some more weeds. Our vegetables are coming up good, but aren't really high enough yet to do any cultivating with the tractor. We have a rototiller that we bought at Intermountain Farmers. It's the front end type, which are bulky and hard to use, and this one has given us a lot of trouble because the worm gear system is under design. It leaks oil, and every time you use it you have to put 90 weight gear oil in, which is an awful nuisance. We have a Ford tractor, an 8N. I think it's an 8N, maybe it's a 9N. That works quite well. Grandpa Langford's little Model G. Ellis Chalmers' tractor has been broken for a year, has a broken axle, and I haven't gotten that repaired. We've been thinking of getting one of the rear-end type rototillers, so I looked at our neighbor, Mr. Brother Zeller, whose place is to the north of our Payson farm. He has a Troy built, and I also looked yesterday at one at the Herald Square Hardware in the Orem Mall, the University Mall. Maybe we'll get one of those. Shalene will be here next Thursday. We're having some of the kids come in a little early, the wives anyway. Looking forward to our family reunion, which begins the end of the month, about the 28th. During the week, I did quite a bit of design work on this press that Wes is building. I'm calling this new press a 300-ton cubic press.
Roman numeral 2. And I've
made quite a number of design changes. I think I mentioned them before. And I'm in the process of drafting those in detail so that we can get the steel
cut up.
And
Wes can work it
with
that as time goes on.
Otto
Rose and I took a brief drive one evening
last week
up to the Deer Creek Reservoir. We had heard that it is full to
the top
and flowing over the spillway, and
we
just wanted to see that phenomenon
because the
reservoir isn't often
that full, so we
drove up there, and sure enough, there
it was right up to the brim,
flowing over. The Provo River
can't handle all of the
water coming over in
some places.
There is considerable flooding in the Vivian Park area. The mountains and the canyon were really beautiful. The cloud formations this spring, and the whole valley has just been fantastically beautiful because of all the rain that we've had, and unusual amount of beautiful clouds, and the green, of course, that is a result of the wet weather. For most of my life, I've had a situation in which it seems like my heart suddenly misses its beat somehow, and doesn't particularly hurt, but I get a sort of a rushing feeling to my head, sort of a slight burning feeling, and I hold my breath, and then in just a little, sometimes I cough. It's in a little instance, there's usually not, but then that is the cough. But then things seem to catch on properly again. But then my usually scares me, and my heart will usually end up pounding then as it seems to catch its rhythm. I'm not sure I'm describing this correctly, but it's a kind of a thing that happens quite frequently, and with increasing age seems to happen more and more. It happened in church tonight and lasted longer than usual. It's quite a while before things get to be okay again. And usually after this, I have a rather faint and weak feeling. And the phenomena seems to be related to things I think I've described before, how the first time I was aware of this was when I was broad jumping out at Wilson Lane School in the ninth grade when I was, I guess, about 14 years old. I hit hard with my left heel, and something happened to my heart. At least that's the way I, as though it quit its rhythm and quit its beat. And the jolt seemed to affect this. And then when that kind of phenomena, when I've unexpectedly missed a step or hit hard on my heel, will set that off. I had a serious case like that one time when I was in London, which I think I described once back in 1964, in which it was really a bad situation like that. I've gotten so it doesn't worry and bother me like it used to, but still it is a bit of a worry. I talked to doctors in years past about it, but never had any indication as to whether it was anything to worry about, anything that could be fixed or controlled or whatnot. There is no pain in the heart area in connection with this. It's just a peculiar sensation, and particularly this sort of burning sensation that will tend seemed to be rushing up to my head. Today is June 30th, Monday, 1975. Our entire family, including all the grandchildren and the spouses, except for Charlotte, who is on a mission in Argentina, are up at the BYU Aspen Grove Family Camp having our first Tracy and Ida Rose Hall family reunion. Tracy and Betsy and their family arrived at about 12:30 p.m. Saturday night, but spent about an hour or more looking for their cabin, since everyone had gone to bed and there was no one at the camp to show them where their cabin was. Most of the rest of us came up Saturday afternoon and checked in around 3:30 or 4 o'clock. Shirlene flew out early from White Plains, New York, arriving sometime last week. Dan came later. Karen came, I guess, a week and a half or two ago with Mark and Stephen, and David flew out later. Liz and Marty, with their children, Greg and Emily, drove straight through from California, arriving about 4 a.m., I think, on last Saturday morning. Last night at the Provo Pleasant View First Ward sacrament meeting, our entire family made up the program. We spoke on the theme of missionary work. All of us gave, all of the adults, including the spouses, gave short talks, except for Mother, who had one prepared, but time was running short at the end, and she decided that she wanted to give me all the time possible since I was the last speaker. We went in order from the youngest to the oldest. Nancy started out by reading the fourth section of the Doctrine and Covenants. Then we followed with Virginia, who gave her experiences, or an experience, and her feelings about it on her mission, during her mission and her return trip to Scotland. Then Marty spoke briefly on some exciting and adventure-like aspects of missionary work, citing a time he was put in jail when he was in Italy, and a couple of other circumstances. Then Elizabeth sang "How Beautiful Upon the Mountains." Sister Taylor accompanied her. David then spoke on an interesting idea, his observation and Karen's observation, that the most successful missionaries in the Princeton ward where they live are those who have learned to communicate with adults. And David gave several examples of how young men and women could learn to do this. I guess Karen spoke before David. She spoke about an interesting conversion that occurred because of Relief Society activities in their Princeton ward. Then came Betsy. She brought Huntington Tracy Hall with her. Huntington is about 5 years old, and she wanted Huntington to tell how he was doing things towards a mission in the future, but Huntington was too bashful to speak, and Betsy finally had to say. Huntington said he was going to save a nickel out of every dime that he earned or obtained for his mission. And then he said he was going to give the rest of it to Jesus.
Tracy gave an interesting talk related to the song that was sung in the beginning of the meeting. The opening song of sacrament meeting was "How Beautiful for Spacious Skies." And feet are mentioned there, and then of course in the song that Liz sang, feet were mentioned. So Tracy gave an interesting talk concerning feet, and let it lead into how Jesus had come to the earth, which is often said to be his footstool, and trod upon it with his feet, and how he had washed the disciples' feet, and how Mary had washed Christ's feet and bathed them with her tears, and so on. Shirlene then talked about how you should be prepared for any situation which might arise where anyone could be a missionary. And said how when she first married Dan, she opened the glove compartment when they were leaving for their honeymoon, and it was filled with Book of Mormons, which fell out when she opened the door. And I gave other instances and examples of how if one is going to be a missionary, like every member is supposed to be, you've got to be prepared and have the equipment and the materials on hand for every opportunity that occurs. Dan spoke on the two types of situations that arise as a transient situation, such as being seated by someone on a plane, which may only happen once in your lifetime, and then situations involving neighbors, relatives, friends, people where you work. And in the latter case, showed how you could only approach these people effectively if you first showed them that you truly were their friend and were concerned and were not just all of a sudden anxious to make them members of the church. In the case of the transient situation, he told how you could use openings and find openings and ask the right kinds of questions to have an opportunity to speak to them about the gospel. Then, as I already mentioned, Ida Rose passed because the time was a little bit over on the meeting. I was the final speaker and spoke briefly about the time when the flowers arrived for Ida Rose that the Burneys had sent from Scotland, and how that had been an inspirational moment for me. And then about the time that Jim Hall, the patent, the man who works in the U.S. Patent Office as a patent examiner, had called me on the telephone at BYU to tell me that he was now a member of the church, and the inspiration that I had felt at that point that made all missionary activity in which I had ever been indirectly engaged seem so worthwhile. All members of the family did a very good job. It was thoughtful. The presentation was just first rate, to the point, and very effective, very, very professional. And spiritual, no time wasted. And Ida Rose and I were just so thankful to have such good kids and such good sons and daughters-in-law. And the bishop and Brother Elwood Peterson of the stake presidency and ward members and everyone just congratulated us on a very fine family presentation for that sacrament meeting. A total of 11 of us had
performed, and in order to get it done, we were only about 5 minutes over the usual time for sacrament meeting, and to have that go off as well as it did with that many members participating was very satisfying indeed. After dusk last evening here up at the camp, we attempted to show family movies but found the movie projector to be broken. We fooled with it for a long time and finally got it to work just enough to show the movie on Donald Duck and his dog washing machine. We gave up on the movies and showed slides that the children had brought. Then Elizabeth brought out her guitar and we sang some songs for about an hour. Very lovely, spiritual, and nice experience for all of us. Virginia's boyfriend, Scott Quist, and Nancy's boyfriend, Douglas, came up to the camp with us last night and stayed for a couple of hours before going.